thank you for tuning in to IGH 260. Today's broadcast, lesson number 2 of week number 16, studying Matthew chapter 16, part of a one chapter per week, 260-week, 5-year-long study of the New Testament. As we get started, these reminders. To access all of our materials, always free, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. To receive a list of these materials, just email us at free@ighradio.com. For text updates, text the word IGH free to 55222. That's IGHFREE, all one word, text IGH free to 55222. Two great ways to study God's Word. A free, self-paced online program. Get started by going to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study by mail, call this toll-free number 1-855-IGH-6988 to receive our free 30-lesson Bible study series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com. Let's get into Matthew 16. In our first study of Matthew 16, we introduced two summaries. First, a study of the key words that we find in the chapter, and then second, an overview and an outline of the chapter. We were near the end of our overview as the broadcast ended. Today, we take up just where we left off, Matthew 16, 21 through 28. Completing what we already started about this last section of the text, we note that immediately after Jesus told the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ in Matthew 16, 20, Jesus told his disciples about his impending trials, his coming suffering, his eventual crucifixion, and then finally his resurrection, Matthew 16, 21. Yes, the Christ of God would be tried and convicted. Yes, the Christ of God would suffer. Yes, the Christ of God would be crucified. And yes, he would rise the third day. When Peter, who correctly stated that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, just a few verses earlier, when Peter heard this, he took Jesus aside, and Peter rebuked him. Rash, reckless, impetuous, imprudent, that Peter. Imagine taking Jesus to task. Imagine telling Jesus that he was wrong. Imagine contradicting Jesus, telling Jesus that what he, Jesus, said would happen would not happen. Peter surely thought that he was right, but Peter was wrong. And Peter was wrong because he did not see how, he did not understand how, the Christ of God could be tried and convicted, humiliated and forced to suffer, and then be hung on a cross to die. Jesus' response to Peter was harsh. The same man who moments earlier in this passage grasped God's leading and concluded that Jesus was God's Son was now called Satan by that Son. He was now called an offense to that Son. And though Peter's first answer had its genesis in God, Peter's thinking here showed that he was not mindful of the things of God, but the things of man. The closing verses of this chapter relate what Jesus taught the disciples about the non-negotiable necessity of Jesus' trials, his sufferings, and his death. But Jesus did not just address his need to go through these things. Jesus told them, the disciples, that if they wanted to be his disciples, they would have to go through similar trials themselves. They would have to deny themselves. They would have to bear their own crosses, and they would have to follow Jesus. They must be willing to lose their lives for Jesus' sake. They must be willing to give up everything. Because one day, Christ, the Son of Man, the Son of God, would come to reward those who so selflessly served him. And as the chapter closed, Jesus told the disciples that some would be alive to see him coming in his kingdom. let's get deeper into the heart of Matthew 16. In Matthew 16, verses 1 through 4, we note this. In the opening verses of this chapter, the Pharisees and the Sadducees tested Jesus by asking for a sign. Like most chapter breaks in our English translations, the first word in the first verse usually indicates a change of some kind. Here, it's the simple connecting word and, as it's usually translated, but rendered as then, or now, or even not translated in some versions. Since that term appears more than 9,000 times in the New Testament, we will simply note here that it was a very common transition term. The Pharisees and the Sadducees came to Jesus. In our earlier studies, we noted the number of times that the scribes and Pharisees were associated with one another, either as they came to Jesus or as Jesus addressed them. See, for example, Matthew chapter 23. In this context, the Pharisees and the Sadducees came together to Jesus. They are joined four times in the chapter, in the opening verse, and then again in Matthew 16, verse 6, verse 11, and verse 12. They also came together to see what John was up to in Matthew chapter 3, verse 7, and they came following each other in Matthew chapter 22, verse 15. Where the Pharisees first attempted to trap Jesus about taxes, and then, a few verses later, in Matthew 22, verse 23, when the Sadducees took Jesus to task about the resurrection. They are mentioned together in the same verse yet again, in Matthew chapter 22, verse 34 and following, where we read, "But when the Pharisees heard that he," that's Jesus, "had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, 'Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?'" As you can see, both groups, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, tested Jesus regularly. Some form of the word translated as test, there are seven distinct forms. Some form appears 68 times in 59 verses across the New Testament. It appears most frequently in Luke 10 times, followed by Hebrews and Matthew, where it appears 9 times in each of those two books. In Matthew, it appears 3 times in the 4th chapter. In Matthew 4, verse 1, where Jesus was tempted by the devil. In 4:3, where the devil was identified as the tempter. And in 4:7, when Jesus said, "You shall not tempt the Lord your God." In Matthew 6:13, Jesus taught the disciples to pray, "Do not lead us into temptation." We see it, of course, in this passage, Matthew 16, verse 1, where the Pharisees and the Sadducees tested Jesus. That same sense of testing appears in Matthew 19, 3, when it was just the Pharisees who came tempting Jesus, this time about divorce. It was the Pharisees again in Matthew 22, verse 18, where we read, "But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, 'Why do you test me, you hypocrites?'" Later, in the same chapter, Matthew 22, verse 35, a lawyer asked Jesus a question, testing him. It appears for the last time in Matthew 26, 41, where Jesus admonished his listeners to watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. We have not defined the term in our context yet, so let's take a few moments to do that. Before we do, note this. The meanings of this term are not the same in all 9 instances in Matthew, nor are they the same across all of its occurrences in the New Testament. That principle applies not just to the meaning of this word, but to the meaning of every word used in the New Testament. Of course, it applies to the meaning of all words in every setting. My favorite example, the word run. What does the word run mean? Of course, its meaning will be determined by its use in a given context. Are we talking about a home run in baseball? Or someone out for a brisk run? Or someone who drives their car as they run to the store? Run has many meanings, more than 170 nuanced meanings, 179 in fact, at dictionary.com. No, the word test does not have that many shades of meaning in the New Testament. as we consider what it means in this setting, note that most translations use some form of the word test, including test, tested, or testing. A limited number of versions render the term as something other than test. At least two translate the original term as tempting. One translated the word as trap, as in the phrase, wanted to trap him. Bauer lists four definitions for the word. First, to make an effort to do something. Try, attempt at times in a context. The emphasis in this first definition, try or tempt. John was going to test out his new fishing rod. Second, it means to endeavor to discover the nature or character of something by testing. Try, make trial of, put to the test. The focus in this second definition, discovery. Susan used a magnet to test what kind of metal the object was. Third, the word means to attempt to entrap through a process of inquiry, test. The word entrap conveys this third meaning of test, specifically by trying to catch someone off guard. And then fourth, the word means to entice, to improper behavior, tempt. The last meaning, to attempt to get someone to do something wrong. If you listen closely, you realize that the third definition fits the bill here. The Pharisees and the Sadducees attempted to entrap Jesus by asking questions that they hoped would put Jesus on the spot. The translations that we referenced that use some form of test or entrap capture just that idea. Another thought here before we move forward. The last two definitions of test were negative. The third of the four, the one that applied in Matthew 16:1, used the word test in order to convince, in order to prove, that someone believed, said, or did something with which you disagreed. Rather than ask them straight out about it, the religious leaders often laid traps by asking seemingly innocent questions. The trap part of the question assumed that there was no way to answer the question without indicting yourself. For example, Thayer noted that the term conveyed a bad sense, to test one maliciously, craftily, to put to the proof his feelings or judgment. Note those words, bad, maliciously, and craftily. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew 16. This reminder as we close, to enroll in our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.